Good morning, everyone. Good morning, those on Zoom with us. And good to be back. And let's have a look at the parasha. So this week's parasha is Parashas Truma, which really has one theme. The theme is the building of the Mishkan in the desert when the Jews built the Mishkan. There's different opinions of how exactly when and how it happened. Standard opinion is that it was after Yom Kippur, after the giving of the Torah, after the sin of the golden calf, that Hashem, as an atonement, asked the Jewish people to build a Mishkan. He told them to donate, to prepare, and then eventually it was built and it was ready or inaugurated on just before Pesach, 2 weeks before Pesach, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So, more specifically, when we talk about the count of the 613 mitzvahs, there's actually three mitzvahs in this week's parasha. The one is the building of the Mishkan. I'm talking about now according to the Rambam, because actually there's a whole dispute of how to count the mitzvahs in this week's parasha, whether the building of each vessel is considered its own mitzvah and so on. But according to the Rambam, building the Mishkan is one mitzvah. There is another mitzvah, a negative mitzvah, not to remove the poles from the ark. The ark was carried by poles, but the poles remained there even when the Mishkan was stationary and it was prohibited to take them away. And the third mitzvah that's in this week's parasha of the 613 is the arrangement of the 12 showbreads, the Lechem HaPanim, every Shabbos that then was eaten by the Kohen. Okay. Oh, sorry, I need to share a screen here. Give me 1 second. A bit out of practice here. There we are. Okay. So we look at number one. Let's learn some of the psukim in number one in the handout. Just the introduction, so let's have a look. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yikhu li truma, they should take for me a truma, in other words, they should donate and separate from their resource to give to the building project of the Mishkan. Me'es kol isha she'idven alibo, this should come from each person who will give it with the donation from their heart, in other words, it has to be willingly. Tichu es trumasi, you should take the, he calls it my truma, my separation, my donation for the Mishkan. And then the pasuk continues and says, "V'zoisa truma, what is this truma? What is this separation that we're talking about? Asher tikhu ve'itam, that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, should take from the Jewish people. Zahav v'chesef on the choshes, gold, silver, copper." And then the next psukim go on to a whole bunch of things, about 15 items that were used, materials that were used in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, and the garments of the kahuna, of the priesthood, which we'll talk about next week. Okay. Then in number two, we learn the, after it enumerates all these things, the pasuk says, what I want you to do with all these things, the asu li migdash, you shall take for me, you shall make for me a sanctuary, a mikdash, v'shachanti b'soichem, and I will dwell among them. All right. Now as the Rambam points out, we'll come back to it a little bit later as well, this commandment is not only referring to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan. It's also referring to the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. It's a general commandment to build a home for Hashem, which was manifested in building a Mishkan. Then Mishkan means a temporary dwelling place. It was also then translated into building a Mishkan when they first came into Israel, which there was a Mishkan for about 400 years. And then eventually it was the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. And even now, it's fulfilled due to building places of worship and shuls and bate medrash and so on. But we'll talk about it a bit later as we get into it. So what I want to share with you today is two things. I'm going to share with you two things that I learned over the last few days. One is a little piece from Shvilei Pinchas. It's one of those things that I often quote from Pinchas Friedman. He's a writer today in Israel, a big Talmud Chacham, and he puts out these things on the parasha every week. Sometimes they're absolutely fascinating. And I'm going to connect it afterwards to a very deep essay, a very deep talk that I learned for the first time, actually, this Shabbos morning. And when I get there, I'll tell you why it was so amazing for me, because it was addressing something that was on my mind since Friday. And it was just such divine providence, Hashgacha Pratis, that I learned it. A talk from the Lubavitcher Rebbe on building of the Mishkan. And we'll get there. Okay, so let's go. Okay, so The Ora Chaim HaKadosh, the great Reb Chaim Ben Attar, the Sephardi commentator on Chumash, he picks up on this concept that the instruction in building the Mishkan, according to the Rambam, which is in the Pasuk of Asul Migdosh, you'll make for me a Migdosh, does not only refer to the Beis HaMikdosh, but refers to all the future temples. That's the Rambam's view. Not everyone agrees with the Rambam, but that's the standard Rambam view, which is widely accepted. And he says, why is it like that, right? And the whole thing is strange. The Parsha is actually talking about the Mishkan. And yet when it gives the commandment, it says, make for me a Mikdash, right? And therefore the Ora Chaim says, this is exactly how the Rambam knew that it's not only referring to the Besam, to the Mishkan. Because when the Torah, throughout the whole Parsha, calls it a Mishkan, and yet when it introduces the commandment, it says, make for me a Mikdash. Why would the Torah do that? Why would the Torah change that? So obviously, as Rambam derives from there, it was meant to be a continuous commandment to always build a Beis HaMikdash in whatever form it takes, right? As he says that it's mitzvah asei koileles kol hazmani. That's what the Ora Chaim says. It's a positive commandment that includes all times. All times. Yeah? Now, we also know this. It's interesting that the pasuk, we learned it in number two. If you'll notice, if you look at number two, it says, Ve'asu li mikdash. Make for me a mikdash. Right? The Chazal tell us that whenever, it says it before about truma also, v'ichul li truma, we'll get to that later. But Chazal have an interesting thing where they say in the Medrash, that whenever in the Chumash it says the word li, it means it's eternal. Which then fits into this concept. The Torah is telling us in the Parsha to build a Mishkan. Yet it says, v'osu li mikdash, make for me a mikdash. Uses the word mikdash because it's referring not only to the Mishkan, but to all the future temples as well. And that fits in with the fact that it says, v'osu li, because li means eternal. Now, what does it mean it's eternal? Even if it does refer to the Beis HaMikdash, and the first Beis HaMikdash, and the second Beis HaMikdash, and all the Mishkans, but they all destroy. We don't have them today. So this is where we get into the concept that it applies even beyond the Beis HaMikdash. And that is the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash even today in the context of how it's permitted today, which refers, as he says, to two things. One is, as the Chazal, the famous Chazal, that refers to shuls, bote medrash, places where we learn, which are called, the shul is called a mikdash ma'at, a miniature Beis HaMikdash, and that's how we fulfill the mitzvah, which is an amazing thing, which means you build a shul today, not only you're building a shul, you're not only providing a service, you're actually fulfilling a mitzvah building a Beis HaMikdash, right? But it goes further than that, and that is, he says, refers also to the Jewish home, building a home. When you build a home in a proper way, where you invite Hashem into the home, you create a Beis HaMikdash. And he emphasizes that on the famous principle, right? When people get married, they build a new home. We know that the mainstream, the traditional home is a marriage, ish v'isha, a man and a woman. Did I put it on the... No, I didn't put it on the handout, right? No. So ish v'isha, man and woman. We know the famous concept that ish and isha, man and woman, are the same letters, right? Except for one. So the aleph and the shin is the same. The difference between the ish and the isha is the ish has a yud and the isha has a hey. Yud and hey, of course, is Hashem's name, right? Hashem's name. And that's why when the ish and isha come together and build a home and they invite the yud and the hey into it, or they invite Hashem into the home, they invite Jewishness into the home, that is a Beis HaMikdash. That's a temple, right? Of course, connected to the famous Alshich, just having a look back at number two, where the Alshich says that Hashem said, make for me a mikdash, v'shachanti b'soichom, and I will dwell among them. The famous Alshich, where it says, it really should have said, v'shachanti b'soichoi, I will dwell in it. So what does it mean, I will dwell in them? It means, I will dwell in every person's home. B'soichom, among them, among the Jewish people. That when they build a home, and they make a place for Hashem in that home, that becomes a Beis HaMikdash, and it refers to this pasuk, v'shachanti b'soichom, I will dwell among them, I will dwell in each home. Right? So this Shvilei Pinchas says a beautiful thing. He says, that's why, I'm going to explain a bit what he means. He says, that's why, he says, there's a minag, This is one of the reasons he says there's a minhag, there's a custom, that when two people get married under a chuppah, the marriage takes place through a ring. Tabas, a ring, right? Why a ring? Now, first, let's understand the question. Why not a ring? So the whole concept of giving a ring under the chuppah, right, is we have a halachic process in Gemara called kiddushin. How does the marriage take place legally? There's the legal part of the marriage where technically man and woman actually legally become married. It happens when the husband, the chosen, gives the color something of value, right? Now, actually, technically, it doesn't have to be a ring, right? It could be a bowl of fruit, it could be anything. As long as it's got a certain value, if he gives her something value, he kind of acquires the womanhood in her, the marriageability in her, sort of thing. And that, al pi halacha, creates man and wife. That's the beginning. Then there's also the concept of the chuppah, where they come together, to live together, and so on and so forth, the shor brachos, and all the other components. But the actual marriage takes place through the process we call kiddushin, which is giving something of value. Somehow with time, and there's many reasons for this, but somehow with time, the minhag became, how do we do this? What is that item of value that the chassan gives the color? It's a ring, right? So he says why. He says like this, because the ring goes back to the Mishkan. Very interesting fact. I never do this. This is beautiful. Have a look. And if you just turn over your handouts, you'll see number 5. Let me just explain. When they built the Mishkan, so there were, in this week's parasha it explains, they built certain items like an ark, a table, a candelabra, and so on and so forth. But then the structure of the Mishkan, how they brought it all together, was through beams called kroshim. How were the beams put together? So the way it worked was that there was like bolts that connected all the kroshim. How were those bolts connected? Through rings which were attached to the kroshim. Have a look at the pasuk. It says, number 5, it's a complicated pasuk actually, but just the gist of it is like this. The yiyu, it's talking about these beams who kept the Mishkan together. The yiyu soyamim milamata, they should match at the bottom. The yiyu yachto yusamim al-roisha, they should match on top as well. Elatabas or echots, matching the rings. In other words, they had to make rings, but the rings had to match. They had to, the construction, they had to match each one. Ken yiyu l'shneim l'shneim mitzvahs, you know that they should form the two corners together, or be able to put the bolts through these rings. So in other words, the Mishkan was held together by these various rings. So he says, that's why when a man and wife are under the chuppah, they want to get married, they're about to build a Beis HaMikdash, what's going to keep it together, what's going to hold the Mikdash together? The ring that was given under the chuppah, just like the rings which held the beams together in the Mishkan. Yeah? Which then fits into the Nusach, to the declaration that the chassan says when he gives the ring to the color. What does he say? What's the famous line? He says, Hare at, he says to her, you are mekudeshetli. Literally means you are consecrated to me. Now, the reason halachically why that term is used, because mekudesha means exclusivity. In other words, you are mekudesha to me and no other person. When from that moment on, she becomes a married woman, she can't marry anyone else, and so on and so forth. So the halachic application of the word mekudeshet is appropriate, but on a deeper level, he says, "Arat mekudeshet." Through this ring, this marriage is going to create a mikdash. It's going to create a base of mikdash, a place of holiness, and therefore, "Arat mekudeshetly," you're now mekudeshet to me, and we're going to create something of kedusha together. With the yud and the hey, we're going to create that base of mikdash, and that all goes back to this idea that va'asu li mikdash, make for me a mikdash, because the base of mikdash is an eternal thing. Wherever it says li, it's always eternal, till even today we build a Beis HaMikdash when we build a Jewish home. Then he says something which is really very fun, very nice. He says, that fits into another thing. If you look in the Gemara, when people got married, they used to bless the chassan and the kala, right? Essentially, the blessing was that the marriage should flourish and the marriage should work, right? That was the blessing. But the language that was used in Talmudic times, and still used today a lot in certain circles, Shehazivug ya'ale yofe, that the match, the union, should progress yafe. Yafe means beautifully. Why the term yafe? Like yafe in Hebrew, right? Why yafe? So he says that yafe is the gematria of 95, right? If you look in Sefer Achinuch, Sefer HaChinuch is a book, the famous book, that enumerates all the 630 mitzvahs according to the parshas. Each mitzvah has a number. The 95th mitzvah is the mitzvah of building a Beis HaMikdash. So therefore he says, the bracha that you give to the chassan and the kala, shazivug yal yofeh, that the union should progress yofeh, which means it should progress beautifully, and it should tie in to the mitzvah of building a Beis HaMikdash. So the home should be a place of Beis HaMikdash. Okay. So that's part one. But then he continues with a very beautiful idea. And this idea that building a Beis HaMikdash is possible in any time, right? It's possible in a time of the Beis HaMikdash, time of the Mishkan, it's possible now. In other words, now we're in Golus, then we weren't in Golus. Good times, bad times, we always have the mitzvah of connecting to Hashem. We always have the mitzvah of inviting Hashem in to our lives, to our homes, and we always have the ability to build a Beis HaMikdash. So he brings a very beautiful idea of how this is expressed in the building of the Mishkan. So I'll give you a bit of background here. So, as I said, when they built the Mishkan, they built it with these krushim, these beams, right? The beams, the beams, and then the bolts, that thing. We also know that there's a miraculous bolt in the Mishkan, which was called Briach HaTichon. It was a wooden bolt, but it didn't go on the outside. So normally when you build two things, you put a ring and you put a bolt on the outside to keep it together. There was a bolt that went through the beams, right? And the way the Pasuk tells us, let's have a look. Have a look at number three. It says, so there were two bolts, the two outside bolts. One was on top of the beams, one was at the bottom of the beams, right? That's how all the beams were held together. And each two beams had its bolt, and they were kept together that way. Then the Pasuk says, if you look at number three, V'habriach hatichoin b'soich hakroshim, the center bar halfway up the planks, meaning there was a center bolt that went through, but it went in, right? Mavriach min hakotze el hakotze, went from one end to the other. So the way many mefarshim explain, actually this was a miracle. It was a long wooden beam, it went through. Now, if you have a structure, right? If you have a structure of three things, obviously, if you put in a bolt, it's not going to go around, unless it's elastic. But obviously, if it's a bolt, it's not elastic, right? So this was a wooden bolt, but it was strong. And yet, it actually was miraculous that when it went through, it turned. And it went from one side till the other, all the way through. Known as the Briach HaTichon, the center bar, the center bolt, that went from one side to the other. That was the Briach HaTichon. Now, where does this come from? Where did this bolt come from? So now, stay focused here, because we'll see how it all. So there's a Das Skeli Mibale HaToisvus, one of the early members of Toisvus, one of the Rishonim, brings him a Medrash, that he says the Briach HaTichon in the center bar, that went from one side to the other, in other words, it was completely around the whole Mishkan, came from the stick of Yaakov Avinu. Now, what stick are we talking about? So we have to understand. So I'll just turn the page here, 1 second. Oh. If you turn over your hand out, look at number six. So, before we get to number six, so he says it came from the stick of Yaakov. Now the truth is that the beams in the Mishkan altogether had a connection to Yaakov. Rashi points out a fascinating thing, a famous marriage, but the most beautiful thing, which just is a symbol of complete hope and emunah and bitachon and things, right? I say, the marriage asks, where did they get the beams from? Right? In the middle of the desert, where do you get cedar trees or acacia wood? I mean, whatever tree it comes from, but they're not growing in the Midbar, right? So it says the Medrash, when Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, on the way he planted these trees. And he told his children to take them with them when they come out. In other words, going into Galus, Yaakov was already looking ahead at the Mishkan they were going to build when they come out of Galus. Right? So I'm mentioning that because that we'll see how that fits into the stick, also the special stick. That was the makel, was the stick of Yaakov Avinu. How this has got to do with this amazing amuna that wherever you're going to be, wherever you're going to go, there's going to be a Mishkan, right? Now, what's the sticks? Let's give the background. The background is like this. Yaakov Avinu, we know that he got into trouble with Esav. He took the brachas from Esav. Esav then plotted to kill him. His mother Rivka got word of it, or got wind of it. She told Yitzhak, we have to send Yaakov away to look for a shidduch. Okay. So they send Yaakov away to look for a shidduch in Choron. Similar to what Eliezer did on behalf of Yitzhak. Now in Yitzhak's time, Yitzhak couldn't go himself because he was the Akedah and he was instructed never to leave Israel, so he didn't go. Eliezer went for him. This time Yaakov went himself. Okay, he spent a couple of years in the yeshiva first, and then he went to Choron looking for a shidduch. When he left Yitzhak's house, the Medrash tells us, Rashi brings it down, he left laden with riches. Why? That's how you go look for a shidduch. That's what Eliezer did. Do you remember the story from Eliezer? Eliezer didn't just go stumble look for a shidduch. You got to offer something, especially in those times, right? You got to show that the person will be supported and be taken care of. So what did Eliezer do? Eliezer left with 10 camels. 10 camels. All laden with stuff from Avraham Avinu and jewelry and gold and who knows what, right? And the truth is, Yaakov didn't, as we see in the Chumash. Right? When he arrives at Choron, it looks like he came with nothing. Says the Medrash, that's not what happened. What happened was he left Yitzchak's house filled with stuff. What happened was, as he left, Esav told his grandson, or his son, I think, Eliphaz, he realized that Yaakov left, told his son Eliphaz to pursue Yaakov and kill him. Now, Eliphaz was an interesting fellow. Eliphaz had a very close connection with Yitzchak, his grandfather. And he was a good guy. He wasn't like Esav, like his father. On the other hand, he was very, as Esav was, he was very strict in kibud avaim. So he runs, and he also had a connection to Yaakov, he had a relationship with Yaakov already, says the Medrash. He runs and he pursues Yaakov. He catches up to Yaakov, and he says, Yaakov, I've got a problem. My father sent me to kill you. I don't want to kill you. What should I do? Yaakov says, I've got a plan for you. The Gemara says, Oni choshuv kames. A poverty-stricken person is like a dead person. Because the Gemara says that poverty can drive a person to absolute distraction and absolute despair, right? Okay. So there's a Lashon Chazal, Gemara says, Oni choshuv kames. Yaakov says, Yaakov knew Torah, as we know, he learned in Yeshiva. So he told Eliphaz, why don't you not kill me? Just take everything that I have. Leave me with my stick, but just everything I have. Take everything I have, right? And he did that, and then you'll be able to tell your father, you fulfilled his wishes, you killed me, I'll still be alive, and we're all good. That's what he did, that's what happened. And therefore, when Yaakov arrived at the well, and Rachel came out, and Yaakov, it says, Yaakov kissed her, and he cried. One of the reasons he cried, because he came empty-handed. He was upset. He didn't have anything to give her. Right? Now, Yaakov then spends 20 years in Lavan, amasses a fortune, with a whole sheep and becomes wealthy again. Then leaves, takes his whole family, sends messengers to find out what's happening with Esav, right? And gets word that Esav is about to pursue him with 400 soldiers. So he springs into action, strategy, sends presents, prepares for war, and he davens. Let's see what he says. Right? Have a look at number 6. He says, I'm crying out to Hashem, please save me from Esav, and so on and so forth. And then he says, Kotointi, I have become diminished, I become humbled. Mikoil hachsodim u'mikol ha'emes, for all the kindness and all the truth. He says to Hashem, Asher asiso esav decho, that you did for your servant, Yaakov himself, in other words, right? Why? He says, I recognize and acknowledge, because one of the things we in the first class, Yaakov was worried that he didn't have enough merit, because Hashem had showered him with such goodness already. Maybe his credit had run out, kind of thing, right? So he says, why? He says, Ki b'makli avardi es hayardein hazeh. When I crossed the Jordan River to go into Choron, all I had was makli, my stick. I bolded the word makel, because that's in singular, it's makel, mem kuf lamed, right? Ki b'makli avardi es hayardein hazeh. And now I've got two camps, because he divided his whole camps into two, with all the cattle and the sheep and everything, all his wealth. And look what's happened to me. Therefore, he said, I'm humble and I'm crying out to Hashem. And nevertheless, even though you've showered me with such goodness already, but please save me from the hands of Esau. So what does he mean that I crossed the Yarden b'makli? As Rashi explains, that was the story, because Eliphaz had come and taken everything away from him. And therefore, when he crossed the Yarden, all he had was his makel. Right? All he has is makel, his stick, and that's where he crossed the Yarden. Okay. What's the significance of this makel? And what's the significance, therefore, that the center bolt of the Mishkan, the miraculous bolt that went from one side to the other, came from this makel? So he points out another interesting medrash, the Yalkut Shemoini, that says that this was a very, very special stick. It actually eventually got handed down to David HaMelech, it's a stick that Moshe Rabbeinu had when he did the plagues. Aaron had. That was the stick, the staff of Aaron. Later, it went to David HaMelech. We find when David HaMelech went out to fight Goliath, it says, Vayikach makloi beyoda, he took his makel, same word, the stick in his hand. The Medrash says it was the same stick. And it was in the hands of every other king in the Davidic dynasty until the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And then it's going to be in the hands of Mashiach, when Mashiach comes. That's what the Medrash says.
The staff.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, that's what he says. That's what the point of this Medrash. The different Medrashim, but it's all the same there. Right? Now, he says, what's a Pshat? He says, Pshat's like this. There's another Medrash. And the Medrash says that when Yaakov was coming and he heard that Esau is coming to greet him, and Esau was going to kill him, so it says that Yaakov turned to Hashem and he quoted a pasuk in Tehillim, right? And he cried out to Hashem and he said, Esau einai el hehorim. He says, I'm crying out to Hashem. And he said, Ma'ayin Yove Ezri, where's my help going to come from? Crying out to Hashem, right? And then he said, not when Esau was coming to him. He said it when he was crossing the river and he only had his stick, right? And he's coming empty handed. He said to Hashem, look, Eliezer, when he went, he brought 10 camels, laid them with stuff, and I have nothing. Then Yaakov says, according to this Medrash, Chas v'sholom, he says, God forbid. Because the next part of the pasuk, the first part of the pasuk says, "Ma'ayin yove ezri," where's my help going to come from? So, what was the background to that? Yaakov was saying, "I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I have nothing. I don't even have a bracelet to bring to. I'm looking for a shidduch, but I don't even have a bracelet to give." Right? Then it says, "Ezri im Hashem," my help's going to come from Hashem. Says the Medrash, what was the background to that phrase? The background was that he says, "Chas v'sholem les ano moivit savri min berei," which means I'm not going to lose my faith for one second. That's what Yaakov said. Because I know that Hashem is always with me. The good times, the bad times, the light times, the dark times, it's always there. He came with his stick. How's that connected? He says like this, that the Tzemach Hashem Letzvi, one of the great commentators, says that makel, the word makel, right? He crossed the Yarden with his makel, with his stick. And we make a big deal out of this. It's a stick that went to David the Melech afterwards. Makel is an acronym for an expression we say in davening. Me'olam kivinu loch. Always, I hope, we hope, and we trust in you. Always. Me'olam kivinu loch. In other words, Yaakov crossed the Yarden. He had nothing, but what did he have? Makel. He had Me'olam kivinu loch. Always, I hope to you. Right? Always. And he points out a beautiful thing. He says, Me'olam kivinu loch, we say in davening. I always hope and trust in you. Loch, you. Loch is lamed and final chof. Right? Lamed and a final chof are very different letters. The lamed goes up, the chof goes all the way down. Me'olam kivinu loch, whether things are going very up or things are going very down, kivinu loch, we trust and we hope in Hashem. Right? So that's the symbol of this matzah. In other words, what's the makel? The makel is the never giving up hope. The makel is never saying it's too hard. The makel, therefore, in the Mishkan is the same thing. Sorry, before we get to the Mishkan, we know that when the Yidden left Mitzrayim, they ate the Korban Pesach. Hashem said they should eat the Korban Pesach, right? Where they were about to leave Egypt, where were they going? They weren't going to such a fantastic place. They were going to the desert. As we know that Hashem actually praises us later in Tanakh. We say it in Davening, we remind Hashem, so to speak, that we trusted Him and we just followed. Where did we follow to? Not to a built-up city. We followed Him to the desert, not knowing where our food's going to come from, not knowing anything, right? What does Hashem do? He tells us to eat the Korban Pesach the night before we leave, right? And He says, this is how I want you to eat the Korban Pesach. We have a look at the Chumash, Parshas Bo. You should be ready to go. You should be dressed. Your belt should be tied. Umakelchem beyetchem. And your stick should be in your hand. Same word, makelchem, makel. Because you're going to a desert. You need the makel. Be'oilam kivin aloch. You need to know you're not in a desert, but you're going to have your emunah. You're going to have your bitach, and you're not going to give up hope. Which therefore is the same idea of the Bria Chaticha, in the center bolt, the main bolt that held the whole Mishkan together, came from the Makel of Yaakov. Yaakov taught us how never to give up hope, even if it's a Lamed or a Chav, even if you go through a Yarden, you have nothing with you, you have nothing, everything is taken away from you, things look dark, things look terrible, you can still trust in Hashem and you can still invite Hashem into your own home and you can still build a Mishkan. And therefore when the Makel, the center bolt of the Mishkan, is this makel of it's the wood, the center bolt, the one that went from one end to the other, also symbolic of one end to the other, in other words, good and bad, wherever the situation is, it's never missing, it's always there. Right? Wherever even when the Mishkan is destroyed, even though there's no Besamigdosh, even when in Golos, we could still build a Mishkan, we could still make a Mishkan. Which by the way fits in also. It doesn't bring this, but it fits in the same thing that we know that Yaakov is always, as Pasuk says, that Yaakov is synonymous with the idea of truth, emes. And emes is the same idea. If something's true, it's always true. That's why emes is three letters, aleph, mem, sof, the beginning of the aleph base, the middle of the aleph base, and the end of the aleph base. Right? That's the known thing. Sheker, falsehood, is three letters very tight next to each other. It doesn't cover the whole aleph base. Because untruth is only untrue when it's untrue, but it doesn't last. If something is true, it's true always. Our connection to Hashem is eternal. There is a Beis HaMikdash, there isn't a Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't matter, V'asu li Mikdash, should make for me a Mikdash, it's absolutely eternal. And that's why there's such a connection to Yaakov, and that's why the center bolt of the Mishkan came from the Makel of Yaakov, teaching us that we could always build a Mishkan, and it's actually an eternal mitzvah. It just manifests itself in different ways, depending where we are. Okay, now, that's the piece from the Pinchas Friedman, from Shulei Pinchas. Now I'm going to move on to the Sicha, this talk from the Rebbe, that we can connect this idea to, but it takes it to a whole new level and understands and gives it a whole new depth, which I want to connect to and also share with you why it was so inspirational for me on Shabbos morning. Okay, so the Rebbe begins the talk with a question. A question based on a premise that he often quotes and believes in very strongly, and that is based on the Baal Shem Tov, that the name of something represents its essence, right? So the name of this parasha is very strange. First of all, we know that the name is not arbitrary. It's not just about taking one of the first words of the parasha. It's always significant. And therefore, the name of this week's parasha is Parashas Truma. Says the Rebbe, it's actually a strange thing. Because the whole parasha is about the Mishkan. Truma is just an introduction to the Mishkan. If to build a Mishkan, you need resources. Truma doesn't represent the whole parsha. Doesn't represent everything that it's about, right? Not only that, he says Truma is what you need to give. The truth is, a Mishkan is only called a Mishkan when Hashem decides to dwell there, right? If He's not going to dwell there, there's no Mishkan. You can build a structure, but if He doesn't come, He doesn't come. So it's a critical part, but it's an insignificant part. So his question is, why is this parsha called Truma? Why is the concept of Truma? And in fact, in general, this Truma, we're talking about Truma of building a Mishkan. And by the way, the word Truma normally is not used in this context. The Chazal tell us there's 10 things that are in Torah that are called Truma. The most famous one is a separation you take from your produce and you give it to the Kohen. But over here, it's a truma, meaning the gifts, the donations to the Mishkan, right? So why is the parasha called truma? How does the idea of truma in this week's parasha represent the essence of the entire parasha, which is in fact building the Mishkan? If anything, we imagine the first pasuk of the parasha, or the name of the parasha, to be connected to the other pasuk we learned, which is the Asuli Migdosh, make for me a Migdosh and I'll dwell, right? I'm just going to stop the share because I don't need the handout anymore. Give me 1 second. Okay. So that's the question here. Then he goes to another question. And that is, why actually do we have such a detailed report of the Mishkan? Why? Everything in the Torah is eternal. The Mishkan was a one-time thing. Now, we have a detailed report in Tanakh of the laws of building the Beis HaMikdash. That's actually relevant. And that's eternal, on a practical level. Right? Because we need to know for the third Beis HaMikdash. We're going to have a third Beis HaMikdash. We need to prepare. Or, as the Medrash says, when it came to Yecheskel, and Hashem told us to learn the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, because then, even when we in Golis, it'll be as considered as if we are building the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so that's relevant. So why is the Mishkan taught to us with such detail? Why do we need to learn how big the Oren was and how big the crushing of the beams and the curtains? Why is that so relevant? Now, you could say, as we said before, that's an obvious one, because the Mishkan is an eternal mitzvah, it just manifests itself in different ways. The Rebbe mentions that, and he says, not enough. Right. Yeah, that's true. The lesson is true. That's what we said before. It's an eternal thing. We can always build a Mishkan. But he says the fact that could be done very briefly, the fact that the Mishkan is taught to us with such detail means it's not just that there's an eternal mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. That eternal mitzvah somehow is specifically connected to the Mishkan even more than the Beis HaMikdash. There's something specific and unique about the Mishkan that emphasizes a point about the mitzvah of building a Beis HaMikdash that we don't find even in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though the Mishkan really was temporary, meaning its Kedusha was temporary, and the structure of the Mishkan was a one-time thing, really, it was a temporary thing, until we get a Beis HaMikdash. In fact, once the Beis HaMikdash was built, you can't build another Beis HaMikdash anywhere else, you can't build a Mishkan anymore, it's only a Beis HaMikdash. But nevertheless, we get to learn such detail about the Mishkan because there's something about, not just about the general mitzvah that's eternal, but something specific about the Mishkan, right? So he goes into a whole thing like this. He says the following. We find conflicting midrashim. Okay, this is a deep idea, so let's see if we can, I'll try and make it as clear as possible. We find conflicting midrashim. We know that there's a famous idea that when Adam HaRishon sinned and Chava with the fruit, the Shekhinah went away from the world. Subsequent negative things also made the Shekhinah go more and more and more away, up until the seventh heaven. And then seven tzaddikim came down, Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and others, and started bringing the Shekhinah, the divine presence, back to this earth, until Moshe Rabbeinu was the seventh, and he brought the Shekhinah back down to this earth. But we find conflicting midrashim about how the Shekhinah, when the Shekhinah re-entered the world, so to speak. Essentially, one Medrash says that it was by Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. Right? That's when Hashem's presence came back to the world. As the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim says, talking on behalf of Hashem, that Hashem said, when I came to the Mount Sinai to give the Torah, Bossi Legani, I came back to my garden. I came back to my world. Yeah. That's one Medrash. Another Medrash says that it was with the building of the Mishkan. We built the Mishkan, and then Hashem's presence came into the Mishkan, right? That's the two conflicting midrashim. So the Rebbe explains, actually not conflicting, it's two stages in Hashem's presence being in the world. It means like this. It first came by Matan Torah. By Matan Torah, however, the Shekhinah was, so to speak, imposed on the world. It was a gift coming milamayla from above, right? The Mishkan, the world invited Hashem into the world. We made the Mishkan. Now, using the terminology that Chassidus uses. In other words, Matan Torah came milamayla, from above. The Mishkan came from milamata, from below. Now, we've talked about millions of times the concept that the purpose of creation was dira b'tachtoin, to make a dwelling place for Hashem in this world. The ultimate fulfillment of that mission is not Matan Torah, it's Mishkan. In other words, the ultimate is when we build a home for Hashem. Now, you need stage one. You need Hashem to show us a model of what the Shekhinah looks like, so Hashem comes into the world. But really, the mission, that's why Matan Torah was part one of Hashem's revelation in the world. But the ultimate mission is to actually make the world a better place and make it a place where Hashem could dwell. We need to do that. Because Dira B'Tachtoini means Hashem dwelling in the world below means not that Hashem just happens to be here. It's more than that. It's that the here, this world, is actually facilitates Hashem's revelation. You get that? In other words, Hashem could be here, like someone moves in. Okay, but nothing to do with me. It means I have to get out of the way, right? and let Hashem be here, right? In other words, not someone coming into my house and moving in and I just sit in the corner waiting for him to leave. It's I invite them in. Different. Okay. All right. So, that's why the parsha is actually called Truma. Right? So let me explain. So, you see, there's a very big difference. What actually happens in these two scenarios? What happens when Hashem imposes himself in the world, and what happens when the world facilitates Hashem? So I'm going to use the words he uses here, most beautiful words, and I'll explain them. He says, by Matan Torah, there was Bitul HaTachton. When they made the Mishkan, there was Hizdachachus HaTachton. What does that mean? When the Torah was given, the existence here below was nullified, was cancelled. When they made the Mishkan, the existence here was refined. Now, what does that mean? So we know that when Hashem gave the Torah, what actually happened to Hashem with the Torah? The world stopped. The birds didn't chirp, the animals didn't make sounds, nothing, right? The whole world stopped. Complete stopped. Why did it stop? Because Hashem's presence arrived. Hashem's presence arrived, there's an awe, right? That's what happened, and it was equal throughout the whole world. Everywhere in the world just stopped. Everything stopped. Why? Because when Hashem's presence, infinite presence, imposes himself on existence, existence must defer and stand back, right? And that will happen equally, no matter if the person's more godly or less godly, or more knowledgeable, less knowledgeable, or clever or not clever, doesn't make a difference. It's the king is here, everyone gets out of the way. That's why with Matan Torah, there was what we call Bitul HaTachton. The world here was cancelled, was nullified. Stood back. You want to live here? I'll stand back. The Mishkan was Hizdachachus HaTachton. In other words, no. When the world invites Hashem, the world is not ceasing to exist. The world is refining itself to a point where it's facilitating godliness. I'm cleaning, I'm not destroying the house, I'm cleaning the house so you can live here. Right? However, the difference there will be when that happens, right? When that happens, it's great. First of all, the greatness of it is that it's not being imposed on the world, but the world is doing it on its own. However, it's a little bit different because when the world is doing it on its own, in other words, when the tachtoin, when the existence here below is facilitating godliness, then there's going to be differences and different levels. You can't refine everything at the same speed at the same time, right? Certain parts of the world will be holier, certain parts will be less holier, still facilitating godliness, but in a different way. Certain people will do it better, certain people will be more spiritual, will be more godly, less godly, everyone will be doing different. The greatness of it is everyone's doing it. However, not everyone's doing exactly the same. Right? Is that clear? That concept is expressed in the word Truma. Why? What is the word Truma? What does it mean? So actually, it has two. Yeah? Like to ta'asiel, that might, actually, that's ma'asiel, but the same idea. Now, the word truma actually has two meanings. It means to separate. So I've got 10 bags of gold, I'm going to give one away to the Mishkan, right? Let's say. I'm separating from my thing, right? And it has another word, another translation. The word truma means haroma, laharim, to lift up. But how does the lifting up work? It doesn't work the same. So the same thing you make challah, for example, right? You separate challah. What changes when you separate challah? Well, first of all, that piece of challah itself becomes holy to the point you can't even eat it. What happens to the rest of the challah? It also changes. In other words, the separating challah is not just that piece of challah, right? The whole challah changes. You've elevated the whole challah now. Is it at the same level as the piece you've separated? No. The piece separated is completely holy. The one you haven't separated now is at least you can make a bracha of it. You can eat it. You can make a lecha mishnah with it. You can have Shabbos with it. And so on and so forth, right? The differences. That's why the whole parsha is called truma. Because the point of making the Mishkan was to do the step next, the step after Matan Torah. Matan Torah is when Hashem is imposed on the world. There's no differences. The world just stops. Why does the world stop? Because the world doesn't feature. It's bitul hatachton, it's the cancelization of existence to make room for God. That's why there's no differences. Mishkan is when we build the Mishkan. Which point will express that difference dramatically? The concept of truma. The concept where you separate, one part becomes more holy, other part becomes less holy. Why? Because it's happening from below. In other words, the point of the Mishkan, which was for the world to facilitate Hashem, is best expressed in the word truma. It's expressed in the world truma, in the word truma. Truma means that you're refining the physical resources, you're refining the physical existence. You're doing it by making part of it very holy, making part of it elevated, refining it. Truma can only happen when the lowly existence is being elevated, not being cancelled, but being refined. Refining is a process. Our whole life works like that. The shul is holier than our home. Doesn't mean our home is not a Beis HaMikdash, it is. It's not the same. But in order for the home to be a Beis HaMikdash, the shul has to be even holier. Right? And so on and so on. That's how it works. That's all part of the process of us doing it. Okay. That's what he said. That's why the parasha is called Truma. He says, that's why Hashem told us the Mishkan in detail, more than the Beis HaMikdash. Now, you can ask a question, if that's the case, the truth is, this is true with the Beis HaMikdash as well, right? We built the Beis HaMikdash. He says, no. This idea of we doing it, and the preciousness and the greatness of us making it happen, is actually expressed in the Mishkan even more than the Beis HaMikdash. Why? I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you why it inspired me so much. When the Beis HaMikdash was built, the same idea, we were building the Beis HaMikdash. We made it happen. But in the Beis HaMikdash, there was still a gift aspect to it. Where was the Beis HaMikdash built? In Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't the time of Golus. Hashem was revealed. Miracles were happening. In other words, Hashem's presence was in the environment already, kind of in a similar way to the giving of the Torah. Now, not exactly, of course. Generally speaking, Mishkan, Mikdash, all these things is not the Matan Torah. Matan Torah is the gift from God coming from above, the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan is coming from below. But the Beis HaMikdash at the end of the day had this gift aspect to it. In other words, this emphasis of us doing it all and being so precious because we've invited Hashem all on our own now for Hashem to live. We have made it happen. That's not so emphasized in the Beis HaMikdash to a certain degree, but it is emphasized in the Mishkan. Why? Because the Mishkan was in a desert. Says the Rebbe. The Mishkan was in a desert. Desert, Begashmi, it's a physical desert, also a symbolic of a spiritual desert. In other words, a place where it's void, it's empty. Emptiness of godliness, emptiness of spirituality. And that's where the Mishkan was built. To build a Mishkan in a desert, that's the greatest. That's where this idea of us doing it, which is expressed in the word truma, as we said, that's what the parasha is called truma, It's expressed best in the Mishkan, and that's why the Mishkan is told with such detail. So why did this inspire me so much? So I'll tell you a little story. Not a story, I'll tell you just my last few days. Interesting thing, right? So, and maybe I shouldn't do this, but and I hope it doesn't come out wrong. But it was very inspirational for me, and that's why I'll share it with you. Because, this idea can be broken down in many, many different, many, many, many different levels, right? So I was away for 5 weeks, and it was an amazing spiritual recharge, right? On many levels. First, I was by the Lubavitch Rebbe's oil, and the Rebbe's room, and I davened there. But just generally, to be around intense, packed, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, high-level, just Yiddishkeit community is just amazing, right? Just to give you an example, I went, everything's just Jewish around you. Like, I was in Muncie, right? So in Muncie, there's these, stores which are bigger than Kohl's, but it's all kosher. And full of Yidden shopping there. Just, it's the most amazing thing. So I went to one of these shopping malls. So I walk into a shoe store, right? I need to buy a pair of shoes. So I'm walking to the shoe store. Two Hasidic Yidden there. They're the salespeople. Pay us. Talk to one guy. Yeah, please come inside. And he says, actually, my friend will serve you. I've got to run out to Davin Mincha. I'll be back soon. So, it's just like a different sort of thing. Anyway, I'm talking to this guy. Just give us an example. I'm talking to this guy. Anyway, I bought a pair of shoes. And it was a good pair of shoes. I think it was comfortable. But more expensive. So I don't want to normally buy. As I'm packing up, this is a Jewish salesman, see, in a Jewish community, right? He tells me, I think the first time you should wear it is Shabbos. I said, why? He says, because the Gemara says, and it won't be a problem that it's expensive, he says. Because the Gemara says that Hashem decides how much money you're going to have from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. But what you spend on Shabbos doesn't count. It's not part of the Cheshbon. So if you wear it the first time, Shabbos, it'll be okay, right? Then I went into the grocery thing, and the woman in the counter, which is just a good Chodesh, it was Rosh Chodesh Shvat. But just, there's minyonim. You want a minyan? There's a thing I used to visit there in Muncie where there's like a minyan factory. It's like this huge complex. It's tense. Every 15 minutes, a new minyan for Shachar starts. Then they've got these big, when you finish Shachar, they've got these big libraries you can go sit down and learn. You're just immersed in like a spiritual, holy learning environment, and it was just amazingly uplifting. And then I arrived back in Sydney. And I went to buy milk, Chalav Yisrael. There's a problem, the trucking company's a problem, so you can't get Chalav Yisrael. If you told a guy in Muncie you can't get Chalav Yisrael, look at you if you're mad, right? Looking for a safer, well, I don't have it in Sydney. It's got to be worth it, right? I follow the Hasidic tradition. I go to mikveh every day before davening. I go to mikveh, there's a problem. The shower's not working. There was a halachic issue with me. Don't ask, right? I thought, oh my gosh, back in Sydney. And it was troubling me a little bit. And I knew I have a mission in Sydney. By the way, I love Sydney, just for those that are worried about this. I'm not going anywhere. But just the spiritual, we're not, let's face it, we're not the most spiritual city here. On many levels. And it's a little bit of a culture shock when you spend 5 weeks in a different kind of community and you come back, whether it could be Israel, Yerushalayim, Muncie, New York, whatever the case is, right? It's just surrounded by Yiddishkeit the whole time. And then I sat down to learn something on Shabbos morning and randomly pulled out the Sicha. And the Rebbe says, you know what the greatest thing is? Not the Beis HaMikdash. Build a Mishkan in the Midbar. When you build a Mishkan in the Midbar, that's the ultimate mission from Hashem. So I guess my message to me and to everyone is, the mission of creation is not built. You've got to go to Muncie and you may Sha'arim and Yerushalayim once in a while because we need to recharge our batteries. But we want to know where we're really fulfilling Hashem's mission is making a place of Torah here in Sydney, coming to Sha'arim here in Sydney, standing strong here. I mean lots of places like Sydney, right? But standing strong, being connected to Hashem, making our homes Jewish, as intensely Jewish as much as possible, even though we're not in that environment, it's not being done for us. Because here we've got to do it all alone. And we do it all alone, it's coming from us, it's deeper, it's stronger, and it's fulfilling Hashem's mission. It's the Mishkan in the Midbar. All right. Stop there.